What is up, everybody? This is the Sharp Angles podcast. It is midnight Eastern on Thursday, and we are recording live to Twitter, but also if you're listening to this later, we're recording right after round one of the NFL draft. A interesting draft. It didn't start interesting. It was very chalky at the beginning, and then the Falcons just, I haven't recovered yet, Ryan, from what the Falcons, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but what we do need to talk about at the beginning is that Ryan killed it tonight with his mock drafts, as per usual, finished fourth in the Huddle Report for today. He would have finished higher if he'd have trusted his gut and continued to keep Joe Alt at number five. You did it for so long, and then you didn't. But, I mean, great performance by you. I'm sure you're pretty thrilled with how the mock drafts turned out.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really good year. But you're right. I am definitely kicking myself over that because I had Alt to the Chargers in every single version of my mock draft up until this past week with the final version, and I decided to pull him out. And it doubly hurt me because I absolutely would have flip-flopped. I had Alt to the Titans and Latham to the Chargers. I should have stuck with Alt and flip-flopped it. That would have been four more points. I wouldn't have won. It wouldn't have been enough to bump me up to first place, but it would have bumped my score up a little bit, which would have been nice.
Yeah, as soon as, it was funny because you even took, you know, a lot of flack for it.
Yep.
From Chargers fans.
Oh, yeah.
Who ignored everything that Jim Harbaugh has ever said about building a football team and said, oh, we're definitely taking a wide receiver. And then I really liked that right after the draft, Harbaugh comes out and says, you know, I know people are going to ask us about weapons, but offensive linemen are weapons as well. And I go, God bless you, Jim Harbaugh. I'm so excited for you to just be living your best life.
Yeah, Chargers fans, if you're mad, Harbaugh told you all along what was going to happen. He did exactly what we knew he was going to do all along.
Yeah, no, it's just we're living in a Harbaugh world now. You gotta get used to it. We're joined here also by Rich Rebar, who I know has been working hard because there was a flurry of wide receivers at the end of round one. He was doing kind of a live fantasy football look over at sharpfootballanalysis.com, still up there. Lots of great stuff in there. And so I assume that you didn't expect to be as busy as you were on those final few picks, Rich.
No, I did. I always do. I mean, this is always all hands on deck, you know, the thing every year, doing the cover in the draft and, you know, writing a live blog and trying to keep up with everything. That's why the other day when you try to suggest I cut videos and do other things, I'm like, where's the time for all this stuff?
Yeah, fair. I did do a video. Thank you very much. I saw the two of you bowed out on that, but I did one. Thank you about Pittix. Before we get to all that, I do want to, because I'm going to lose track of this, and I'm not going to mention, we have a ton of great content over at Sharp Football Analysis. Ryan's going to be doing another mock draft for day two. We obviously know how good he is at that. Some prop bets for day two. We obviously have the fantasy reactions from Rich. It's part of our fantasy football draft kit, which you can get for $5 off with Save 5. There's a lot of great content going up there at Sharp Football Analysis. The Team Need series is still there, which obviously is still going to be valid as we move into day two and day three of the draft. So make sure you head over to sharpfootballanalysis.com and check all of that out. But I think we have to get started with Pennix. I think that's as good a starting point as any, because we had heard, Ryan, going into the draft that the Falcons were interested in Pennix. That part of it, it's not shocking. But them staying at eight, not telling Kirk Cousins that they were going to do this until like right as the draft is happening, and then taking Michael Penix. It's a really interesting thing. And I know you like Penix a lot. You had Penix very high in your big board. And so I don't think that you're like mad about kind of the value here on this pick, but it's just an interesting situation. And my biggest kind of takeaway is a point you made one time that I thought was very good is one of the benefits of Michael Penix is that he can come in and be good right away, which maximizes value on a rookie contract. And with the Falcons, that's now gone. They've taken that away because Kirk Cousins is going to start for at least the next couple of years until they can, you know, get out of that contract. Even if they want to get out of that contract, we'll see what Kirk Cousins is able to do. So it's just an odd pick, Ryan, an odd kind of situation for them.
Yeah, it's certainly strange. But I do want to start off by saying I have no problem with Penix being the eighth overall pick in this draft. He was the number two quarterback for me. And if you want to argue that May or McCarthy or even Daniels has a higher ceiling than Penix, I'll listen to that argument. It's not crazy to say that, but Penix is so much further along in his development. Not only does he have, you know, so much more experience than most of the other guys, but he played in a very pro style offense at Washington. He is absolutely the best downfield passer from the pocket of any of the quarterbacks in this class, Caleb Williams included, in that particular area of their games. And so, yeah, he's ready to play right away. And so it is interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because the one thing I would disagree with you on is that Cousins is going to be the starter for the next couple of years, because you don't draft someone eighth overall if you're not going to start them soon. Cousins might start for this year, but then they're going to turn it over to Penix. And yeah, they just signed Cousins to a really big contract, so it's strange, but Cousins doesn't want to sit the bench. He doesn't want to have to compete. And so if they say, hey, like, let's get together with somebody, the Raiders, for example, and say, let's work this out. Let's make this a win for everybody and figure out how to sort through this. It'll happen eventually. It probably doesn't happen this year, but next offseason, I'm sure they'll figure something out.
I mean, maybe, but if not, then if Kirk Cousins plays, this team is good. This team would have been a lot better if they'd used this pick on a defense, which they still need. But this team is good. They have been building up the offense. Kirk Cousins, assuming he comes back healthy, is at the very least an above average NFL quarterback. If they just go in and win, then it's not like you can just go to Penix after that. There are still, even if they try to trade Cousins, there's still going to be contractual issues, salary cap issues after that. That's why I said 2 years. After 2 years, those salary cap issues kind of dissipate and go away. And we've only really seen teams eat big salary cap numbers to get away from a quarterback that's not performing. Russell Wilson comes to mind. To do that for a guy that probably, I would bet, the Falcons to win their division this year is probably going to get them into the playoffs. That becomes trickier. And that, I don't know, it just makes it more interesting. I don't know what else to say about it except shocked, Rich. You got anything else more on Penix?
No, it's an aggressive move. I mean, hey, we've been kind of waiting though for like a team to double down at quarterback, right? Like we've kind of always talked about it. No one ever really kind of has like approached it and done it. You know, the Bears even, you know, they could have had a situation where they kept Justin Fields around and still taken Caleb Williams and had Justin Fields, you know, as the backup there. But yeah, I think the overall point is you talk about the Falcons one. This is a team that's favored to win their division already right now and has pretty significant holes on the defensive side of the ball. And when you talk about the NFC, like just getting into the dance is like a huge advantage, right? Like if you can get in and you can maybe have like the 49ers and Eagles play each other in a round, like where they, one of them knocks each other out and then you only have to beat one of those to potentially make like a phantom Super Bowl run, you have a shot in the NFC. But they do have a lot of holes on the defensive side. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Like a team like the Saints probably won't die, right? Like as much as the Saints are like the Steelers, the NFC, like no matter how much we think they're going to go away, like they're still going to be like right there at the end of the season competing for a playoff spot with, you know, with Derek Carr probably. But yeah, I'm interested to see how it plays out. Like I talked to Ryan on the quarterback show. I'm more curious top down about these three quarterbacks in this class that really use this COVID year to their advantage. I mean, if Bo Nix, Michael Penix, and Jaden Daniels are in the draft last year, they're not first rounders. Like, it's not even a question. We're not even entertaining the idea of them being first rounders. And it's not like they stayed for NIL money or anything like that. Like, this was a unique circumstance that was afforded to this draft class and next year's draft class. And like, it's going to be interesting to see like what this develops and like how this plays out for these three guys because they truly maximized that extra year that they were given.
Yeah. And we're going to see that. I mean, we saw that with the final pick of the first round with Xavier Leggett, which I know is a point that Ryan has made, is that he's probably not draftable after
not invited to the combine like at all last year. Like, you know, then we'll see where like a guy like Malik Washington goes or something like that, you know, but like, yeah, all these guys that use COVID to their advantage this extra year, like it's going to be interesting to see what plays out. I thought it was fun though, because, you know, Ryan's argument always for these guys was that they could play now. And then we've got like kind of this weird thing. And it's the guy that you like the most out of all of them.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, to kind of flip that to the other kind of shocking with Bo Nix going to the Broncos at number
12. That's not a shocking, it's just desperation. Like that's
fair enough. I think that is a good point. It's, you know, a lot of people had the Broncos taking Nix. Ryan, you had the Broncos trading back into the first round. Take Knicks in your mock draft. And so, yeah, that part of it's not shocking. But, yeah, Knicks at 12. I guess if we're trying to make spin it positively, Ryan, I think you said one time he's like Colt McCoy if he had a stronger arm. And to me, that's at least serviceable, especially in a Sean Payton offense with the way that Oregon ran their offense last year. So maybe this is going to work out at least in the short term decently. But I think that the word Rich used, desperation, is right. This reeks of desperation given where the rest of their roster is right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a desperate pick. But to throw another comparison out that's more relevant now that he's paired with Sean Payton, is you could compare him to Tony Romo too. I think that's sort of the ceiling that you would hope that he would go down a Tony Romo trajectory. And Payton obviously played a big part in the Cowboys signing Romo and developed him. I think they were there together for two or three seasons before Romo took over as the starter there. And, you know, another interesting connection here with him going to Denver is that during the season last year, when Jarrett Stidham surprisingly was named the starter, I brought up the fact that, you know, one of the things that Payton probably likes about Stidham is that in college he played in Gus Malzahn's offense at Auburn, which is a very fast-paced offense. You have to make quick decisions. The downside is that you're not sitting in the pocket and making a lot of decisions, but specifically to Sean Payton's offense, it's a decent comparison in the fact that you're going to make a lot of quick decisions. Well, where did Bo Nix start his career? He was Jarrett Stidham's replacement at Auburn in the Gus Malzahn's offense. Now, he wasn't very good, but he was also 18 and 19 years old when he was playing in Gus Malzahn's offense. And later in his career at Oregon, we saw him become exceptional at that. That was the strength of his game, was making quick decisions. And they also, Oregon sort of changed their offense a little bit to do more of that, actually, because it became such a strength of Nix's offense. So he is an accurate passer who makes quick decisions. And that's exactly what Sean Payton wants. So yeah, I completely agree that it's desperation. I would not have taken Bo Nix at what was 12th overall. But as far as him going to a situation that's good for him, this is a good match. This is a good matchup. I just wish it happened in the second round as opposed to 12th overall.
Yeah, and then the question is, you know, that becomes an issue for the Broncos because they don't, if I'm remembering correctly, have a second round pick. Yep. You would say, well, just trade down. But I mean, it takes two to tango. You have to have somebody that wants to trade up, and who's wanting to trade up there with, you know, the other five quarterbacks already gone, and with a bunch of defensive players that we knew were going to slip. At that point, if you're picking 20th, 22nd, you're going to get a good player because of all of the. If you want a defensive player, you're going to get a good defensive player or a good offensive lineman because of all of, you know, the other players we saw pushed up. And so, you know, did somebody actually even want to trade up with him? I suppose that's the question. If not, you know, they're just kind of stuck there. I do think it's interesting that we've opened this not talking about the three quarterbacks who went 1, 2, 3. I think it was because that was just expected. I mean, I don't even, Rich, what do we even say about Caleb Williams at this point? Like, he went to the Bears. I've had him on the Bears for like 3 months, so I don't really know. Like, I have no reaction to him going to the Bears.
I mean, it's just a, you know, another dagger in the, you know, the Carolina Panthers, the hearts, basically. Yeah. Like, right, especially if he works out. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, the Bears history, like people bring up with the Jets, right? Like, but like, this is a new regime and another, you know, a new Bears quarterback, right? Like, it's like the same thing when people said like Wisconsin running backs were all the same, and then, you know, we have, you know, guys hit, or Ohio State quarterbacks all the same, and Stroud hits last year. Like, eventually the Bears are going to get it right, right? Law of averages, like, we're eventually going to get it right. So, you know, hopefully Caleb's one of these guys to kind of like end the curse for like Bears quarterbacks, you know, never throwing 30 passing touchdowns or 4,000 yards, just like Joe Namath was the last Jets quarterback to throw for 4,000 yards. But, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you just look at these. It's interesting from my end of the spectrum because, like, for fantasy purposes, like, it wasn't, like, a great, like, it wasn't a scintillating first round by any means. I mean, even a guy like Brock Bowers goes to a spot where quarterback's in question. It's a team that drafted Michael Mayer the year before, the top 35 pick. We talk about Penix, like, that's another skill player. But I mean, Brian Thomas is going to like a spot that can use him, but it is kind of like a quagmire, like year one. Xavier Worthy is going to the inherent spot we all want to chase with the Chiefs, but like, we've been down this road before. It's not like the Chiefs are infallible taking wide receivers. You know, we've drafted Sky Moore, we've drafted Mecole Hardman with capital, and like, you know, and not hit. So it's like all the, and Ricky Pearsall, like you mentioned, going to the 49ers. Christie on like what happens with Brandon Ayuk, Xavier Legette. Like if you, you know, Dave Canales definitely has a type, right? Like he worked the past 2 years at Mike Evans and DK Metcalf. Like he is an archetype wide receiver he wants for that role in his offense. So we'll see what happens with there. But yeah, it, just, it wasn't like a great overwhelming like first round for like my neck of the woods though.
Yeah, I especially like the Brian Thomas part of it. We, on the surface, you go, oh, the Jaguars lost Calvin Ridley. I mean, that's going to be a great landing spot. But he kind of overlaps a little bit with Gabe Davis, and they still have Christian Kirk there, who I think could, you know, we saw a couple years ago that he can certainly step into more of a high target role. Evan Ingram is there. And so, yeah, you look at some of these and you don't know. The Ricky Pearsall one, that one specifically with all like of the rumors too. With all of the rumors surrounding Brandon Ayuk is just it's an interesting thing that they kind of sat there and then took that pick. I do want to talk a little bit more about the quarterbacks though. Jaden Daniels to to the Commanders. I think you liked that fit with him with Kingsbury. Am I right in remembering that, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about that way back in February when we first started talking about the draft, and I paired them up together, and that was a big part of it. I think he's a pretty good fit there. He is obviously he's known for his athleticism, but he's also a good, quick decision maker from the pocket, and I think that'll serve him well in Kingsbury's offense.
And then with Drake May, maybe the other end of that with the Patriots, can you talk a little bit about Drake May's kind of accuracy issues and some of the concerns we have, especially, I mean, we got a lot of draft left. There are a lot of wide receivers left, but especially with what the Patriots have around him, I think we're of the top three. He's the one that we're definitely the most concerned about, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just the roller coaster ride of the last 2 years with him. You can definitely put together a highlight reel of his best plays and make him look like a version of Josh Allen. And he makes some great throws. He makes some great throws on the run specifically. Like there is absolutely a high ceiling there. But the whole body of work was so up and down and so many just not even like questionable decisions. There's some questionable decision makings, but just bad throws that you can't really explain. I don't think his mechanics are terrible either, which is sort of like even more of a red flag. Like if you're not accurate and I can't point to exactly why, it makes it feel a lot less fixable. And so maybe that's just something that's going to plague him throughout his career. And you're never going to really consistently get that high ceiling, even though he's going to have the highlight plays mixed in. There's that concern that you're not going to be able to develop it. And I specifically don't like this landing spot for him just because they are starting over. The whole franchise is starting over basically, right? To clean house, move Belichick out, who was, he wasn't just like the coach and GM. He was the king of the Patriots, right? Like he ran everything in that building. And so they're sort of figuring it out, from top to bottom, they're figuring out all over again. So I just wonder, is he with a quarterback like that needs a lot of development? You need stability. And Josh Allen, we had a ton of questions about him when he entered the league, and the Bills, to their credit, gave him stability. They went out and got Stephon Diggs. The coaching staff barely changed at all over his first 4 years in the league. I wonder if May is going to have that. And if he doesn't, it's not going to work out.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. And like I said, they have picks to make. This is a deep class. Some wide receivers, even with the wide receivers we saw go, some wide receivers slip through. There have been Ayuk rumblings, if we get back to Pearsall there and that pick, there have been Ayuk rumblings to New England. And I mean, I think Rich and I think that Ayuk is one of the best receivers in the league. He just hasn't been getting the targets. If he steps in there as a number one, is he the Stephon Diggs for Drake May? I think it's interesting. But if you keep going back to Josh Allen and you think that, okay, well, we can do that with a player. Well, Josh Allen is special because of the level of improvement that we saw. That is not really the norm. And I think that we're going to continue to see this. If you're comparing your quarterback to Josh Allen, then you are trying to say that this outlier is going to be an outlier again. And that is just not the way to move forward. And I'm not a tape guy. I'm not going to sit here and act like I know, if Drake May is going to be good or not. But if your argument for Drake May is, well, Josh Allen did it. Well, I mean, I don't know. Like I don't know if that's going to work out. One more on the quarterback, Rich, because I'm very interested in JJ McCarthy from a fantasy perspective, because it doesn't seem like JJ McCarthy really fits the mold that we're looking for from a, like, definitely going to put up a lot of rushing numbers. He can put up rushing numbers. He scored touchdowns if you do that, but like really like high end rushing numbers, but he's also going to the Vikings. I mean, Kevin O'Connell, what he was able to do last year, even after Kirk Cousins was out, to kind of keep that offense moving. They obviously have Justin Jefferson. They obviously have Jordan Addison. We'll see when TJ Hockenson is able to come back. He falls into, outside of Caleb Williams, probably the best situation here for any of these, for any of these quarterbacks. Are we getting excited from a fantasy perspective at all here for McCarthy, both, you know, this year and from a dynasty perspective?
I mean, more if you're someone that's like doing like a super flex, like QB platoon, or like building like a QB super room, where you can kind of build you know, around that. That's kind of like the, you're probably hoping like the ceiling from like a fantasy perspective is like he can just like nudge like that Trevor Lawrence range, right? Yeah. Like be like that guy that's gonna give you like a little bit of rushing. Like he's not a zero in the rushing department. You know, just doesn't really turn the ball over, but like, is he ever going to be a guy that's like always going to push like 40 touchdown passes? Probably not on the regular. And like, that's what you have to do if you're that archetype of quarterback, right? Like, and we've seen like even the past couple of years, how guys like even Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, like guys with pedigree, like can fall off, and like they're that tier's almost like overrated from like a dynasty and fantasy football sense. I mean, I wrote about it last year too, that like those guys, it's kind of a trap zone for quarterbacks for fantasy football. I do think the landing spot is good, like the insulation. I mean, I'm a big Kevin O'Connell guy. That whole coaching tree, I think, has done a really good job along the lines. Obviously, you like the weapons. They've got a good offensive line. They've got Justin Jefferson. We assume they're going to retain Justin Jefferson. Go out 1 year in on Jordan Addison. They'll get Hockenson back probably midseason and at least have more of a runway with him coming back next year, you know, fully healthy. So it is a good roster and a good environment, you know, playing indoors, like a kind of a favorable division. That's the other thing you guys talk about with Drake May. Like the Patriots are doing a hard reset in like the worst division possible to do a hard reset. And like all those teams are going to be so good this year outside of them, and just give it's just such a, it's gonna be such a daunting, you know, task for New England. We've seen like with a guy like a Bryce Young, or even in today's you know, landscape in general, like you can get buried at quarterback, like career wise, just by landing in the wrong spot or having like a poor run out to start your career that could really kind of shell shock you. And you don't necessarily get a second chance in the NFL very often. So it's going to be interesting to see like how, you know, Drake May handles that spot, or what the Patriots do the rest of this draft. I mean, this is a team that still needs wide receivers. They still need an offensive tackle, like all the things that are quarterback's best friends, they don't really have. They do have a good defense at least, but so we'll see what happens there. But yeah, I mean, I think that's the question with this class. I think you can even question Caleb Williams from a fantasy stance in that regard. Like, does he truly have like Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen upside? Because he's a guy that can run a little bit, but like, he's not Jaden Daniels type of runner.
Yeah, I think your point about his touchdowns and how active he was at the goal line at USC, that gives me, I guess I'd have a little less pause because of that and how important touchdowns, I mean, are with Jalen Hurts. I mean, we saw kind of his rushing game-to-game production not be as good as it had been this past year, but he scored in a bunch of touchdowns, so it didn't matter, right? And so if Williams could score some touchdowns, that Bear offense can hum, then I'm less worried about that. I'm interested in the, you know, you talked about the getting buried thing. JJ McCarthy's new teammate, Sam Darnold, I think he might have some words to say about, you know, about getting buried. I was excited for the Sam Darnold experience. I'll tell you that. I was excited to see what was going to happen there. We hit on it again, just like with the quarterbacks. We've talked about a bunch of wide receivers already and kind of mentioned them. We didn't talk about the top three because the top three just went exactly where we expected them to go. Marvin Harrison ends up with the Cardinals. Malik Nabers goes to the Giants. Roma Dunze ends up with the Bears, with Caleb Williams in Chicago. I think from a fantasy perspective, Marvin Harrison's interesting just because of where he's going in redraft. I mean, he's going to Arizona. We know that he's going to be the number one receiver. That's not really a question. They do have Trey McBride. They do have Michael Wilson from last year, but he's going to be the number one target. But he's also being drafted like a back end wide receiver one. So what are we doing with him? I mean, dynasty it is what it is. But in redraft, I mean, you have to be a little bit hesitant still at his price, even landing in what I think is a pretty good spot, right, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, it's any type of player just hasn't been in the NFL. Like, you know, I posted something about the NFL draft. I mean, like, we think all these are just great picks, right? Like, they're all these picks are infallible, but like, guys fail in the NFL. It happens. So, you know, you're drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. right now in redraft leagues, you know, as a top 10 wide receiver. So, like, you really don't have a lot of room for profit, right? And a lot of room for failure, even if he has like a really good rookie season. Like if he has 80 for 1,005 touchdowns, it's like a pretty solid rookie season. Yep. And you're not going to come close to recouping like that wide receiver 10 plus value. You're going to be able to arbitrage that with a number of guys. You know, if you look at the other guy, like Neighbors is going 10 picks in the position difference than him, but two whole rounds later than him in drafts, which is, you know, definitely you got more room to squeeze. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good spot for Marvin Harrison. I feel really good about him. I don't really want to pay that iron price, so much to say, especially with the guys he's around. But it's hard to push back on that. You know, what's interesting, I think, is like from an early standpoint is, well, what happens with Roma Dunze, I think, is really interesting. Because obviously you only have 1 year probably of Keenan Allen, but you still have to contend with DJ Moore for the rest of at least, you know, DJ Moore's current contract. And we've seen guys like Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, you know, DK Metcalf, these guys that play along like other wide receivers, and they're not like true wide receiver ones. And like, I wonder if that ends up happening with Adunze, like, you know, where he just doesn't consist, like he's a really good real life player, but like for fantasy, he just never is like that locked in wide receiver one. And gamers keep feeling like there's a little meat left on the bone, or like they want him to get over that hump. Because like we talked to all those guys I named, like people like T. Higgins, like those guys all fit that archetype, and they all end up kind of being a little bit overdrafted. I wonder if that is where Dunze's gonna end up falling, you know, big picture, you know, because that, or if like he just hurts DJ Moore too, like, and DJ Moore is back in that boat where DJ Moore consistently lived in that same bucket too as well. So that's an interesting situation. I think there is an easy, just like, you know, you buy the syrup instead of the pancake situation, old Rumford Johnny call out, where you just, you know, you use that as more reinforcement to like support Caleb, right? Like it's just more weapons for Caleb, and you don't try to necessarily thread the needle on, is it going to be DJ Moore? Is it going to be Keenan Allen? Is it going to be a Dunze? Is it going to be Komet on a given week? You just have the quarterback.
And to kind of add to that a little bit, I mean, if you drafted Jackson Smith and Jigba last year in a dynasty league, you were also thinking, oh, well, we only have one more year of Tyler Lockett. Yeah. Whoops. That's not true. And so, I mean, we'll see with Keenan Allen, and we'll see where he ends up. But I mean, if Keenan Allen's back, if he resigns, comes back, whatever happens, then you're stuck in exactly where people are with Jackson Smith and Jigba right now. And so, yeah, it becomes even trickier. I do want to ask you, Ryan, about Malik Neighbors. We kind of slacked a little bit about this. Malik Neighbors, you know, is a little bit of a smaller end for wide receivers. He's definitely more of a yards after catch kind of explosive playmaker. And when I look at the Giants depth chart, when we looked at what they tried to do last year, when you still look at it now with, you know, Wandell Robinson, you know, Jalen Hyatt's not really that yards after catch guy. He's a deep threat, but he's not the biggest guy. I wonder, are we looking at a depth chart that still has a lot of redundancies in it? And is that a concern we have for Neighbors here as we move forward, or does it not matter? It just matters how far Daniel Jones takes him.
I mean, I think it's a concern in the very short term for the Giants, because you don't want to have a bunch of the same guy out there at wide receiver. But I don't have any concerns about Neighbors or the long-term projection for them, because this was just about getting an actual good wide receiver on the roster, right? You know, they've got a bunch of guys that are kind of all the same profile. None of them can sniff Neighbors. So Neighbors is the wide receiver one right away. And I think he's going to perform pretty well in that role, even with Daniel Jones. You know, Jones doesn't have to be great. He just kind of has to do what he's been doing. And Neighbors is still going to put up some decent numbers, because he is obviously the number one weapon in that offense right out of the gate. So, and you know, looking long term, like they obviously are aware of the fact that they've gotten stuck with this type of receiver all over the depth chart, and they're gonna figure it out eventually. Like it's not like it's hard to go out and find someone who's a little bit bigger to plug in. And you know, they still have Isaiah Hodgins on the roster, and like they'll piece together a lineup that, you know, that sort of works for this year, and in the long run they'll probably figure it out, because it just everything comes together now that you've got that number one. It's so much easier to go out and find like a big number two or number three who pairs well with him, because there's, you know, there's a lot of options on free agency every single year where you can plug in a decent guy who pairs well with neighbors.
Yeah, that could just be Darius Slayton, because we're just going to keep writing off Darius Slayton. He's just going to keep like getting 750 yards every single year. And we're just going to just we're not going to even pay attention to it. Reminder, with all these wide receivers, you can read Rich has written up the fantasy profile and kind of a fantasy reaction to all of these wide receivers over at sharpfootballanalysis.com as part of our draft kit, which you can get for $5 off using promo code SAVE5. So I'd go and do that. I think we have to talk about Rich Xavier Worthy next. I mean, there's this whole interesting thing happening at the end of the draft, at the end of the first round, with the Bills trading down twice, with people who then went and drafted wide receivers, that we thought the Bills probably needed. And it's just a very odd situation. They trade back with the Chiefs. I mean, some of their biggest competition. Chiefs come up and pick Xavier Worthy, exactly the type of wide receiver we would think the Chiefs would want. It's just an odd situation. But on Worthy in particular, I mean, you said it, we've kind of chased these wide receivers before with Kansas City, but I mean, this just feels like a really good fit for a team that likely is going to be without Rashee Rice for at least a little bit. It's going to be hard for me not to get excited about Worthy from a fantasy perspective, you know, depending on where this price goes.
Well, from the Bills side, I actually think a lot of this makes sense. Like, a lot of people will look at, like, the Bills trade to the Chiefs. Obviously, the Chiefs are getting a guy that, like, are they helping the Chiefs? But the Bills need, like, a prototypical X wide receiver. And the only guy that kind of fits that profile that is available at this point is A.D. Mitchell, who comes with, like, a ton of red flags to invest this type of capital in. So the Bills just kind of got boxed out with where they were picking in this draft. Brian Thomas Jr. potentially not falling to them. And that's just kind of where it is, man. I think, like, if it was a different situation where the Bills trade with another team and trade back and still end up taking wide receiver, like, no one blinks. This is like what the Bills should have done, is trade back. And but because it's the Chiefs, though, like, it's like you're helping the enemy, like, this whole thing, like, is going on. But I definitely
think that's exactly what I have in my notes, is they know everybody is scared off of A.D. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell is probably the wide receiver they're targeting. If they take A.D. Mitchell at 33 now, after this trade with the Panthers, then they've gotten the receiver they probably wanted that fits in with what they're going to need based on kind of the rest of what they've done in the receiver core. And they traded back twice and picked up picks for a roster that is not as good as you think it is because of some of the, you know, the issues they have now with the cap, Josh Allen getting paid more, all of that stuff. So yeah, I think the freak out about it being to the Chiefs and the Chiefs getting Worthy, who, I mean, like I said, that seems to fit exactly what they're needing. I get all of that. But if what they did was trade back twice and get the receiver they would have taken anyway at 28, that's just good. That's just exactly what you should do. And so, yeah, we'll see what happens in the second round. But if it ends up just being A.D. Mitchell, then they probably just would have taken A.D. Mitchell at 28. And so we are where we are. But back to Worthy. What are you going to say about Worthy?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Worthy fits into this offense. Obviously, people will draw the Tyreek stuff, the lowest hanging branch. I mean, the largest overlap that he has is kind of where Rashee Rice won. And you can say, was it Texas quarterback play or was it Xavier Worthy? But, like, Xavier Worthy didn't win downfield in college. He's a very small player. He's got, you know, 20 percentile arm length, 6th percentile hand size, wasn't a contested catch guy. It shows up, all those kind of, you know, not to use the pun, but shortcomings kind of come into play. And that's like where Mahomes struggled last year. Like, the Chiefs had to play small ball last year with Rashee Rice, you know, and that kick the puck play, basically, that, like, we used to run in the old flag football days. You know, if you got aging Travis Kelce, you add Hollywood Brown to help that. So, I mean, it's just going to be to see where Worthy's development is and where he can, you know, where he can win downfield. Because that's what the Chiefs need. That's what they need. But when you look at, like, what the Chiefs are replacing, it's hard to not be excited, right? Like, you're getting a guy that's getting attachment to Patrick Mahomes. Of course, like, gamers are going to keep going back to that, right? Why would you not be inherent? Like, you're telling me you would have been more excited if Xavier Worthy was in the Panthers instead of, like, being attached to Patrick Mahomes? Like, go ahead. Be excited for the upside outcome. That's all we should care about. So, yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm curious to see where he fits in schematically, you know, with how they're going to use him. But listen, Marquise Brown, Xavier Worthy, Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce, potentially healthy, a lot better than what the Chiefs put on the field as pass catchers the majority of last year.
Absolutely. Xavier Worthy to the Panthers, I mean, We saw DJ Chark, right? Didn't DJ Chark have two games last year? We could have had the DJ Chark experience.
Like, I understand, like, we'll say stuff about, like, Mecole Hardman, and we bring up Mecole Hardman or Sky Moore and stuff. Yeah. But it's like, what are we supposed to do? Like, it's the same thing. Like, if the Bills get a guy, he's gonna be attached to Josh Allen. Like, we're gonna keep taking shots on those guys until we get it right.
Yeah, absolutely. We're gonna. I mean, you're just gonna trust in Patrick.
Those guys are gonna have stats, man. Those guys are gonna have, like, quarterback.
That was my thing with Rashee Rice last year, and it's not looking as great that I have him on a lot of dynasty rosters right now. We'll see what happens with his legal situation, but it was looking really good at the end of last season because he was attached to Patrick Mahomes, and I thought he was a pretty good player. Xavier Worthy's a pretty good player attached to Patrick Mahomes. That'll be fine. He's probably better than Marquise Valdes-Scantling, I would say. Maybe not blocking, but he's probably better than him. So I'm going to be okay with that. On Xavier Legette, Ryan, I know that you didn't think he would end up in the first round, didn't think that this was the type of player that a team would really chase in the first round. The Panthers even traded up back in the first round to get him. What are the Panthers getting here, and kind of what are your concerns with him if they're trying to turn him into, a wide receiver one that Bryce Young really needs?
Yeah, to take him this early and to trade up to make it happen is wild. He had a good year last year, like we were talking about in the last podcast we did the other day. Like, he had a very good year at South Carolina, but he was a fifth year senior and he had done absolutely nothing up to that point with basically nobody on the depth chart ahead of him. And, like, when they were talking about, listening to the draft conversations as he was getting picked, talking about how, like, Shane Beamer loves him and whatnot. I'm like, if Shane Beamer loved him, he might've gotten on the field a little bit earlier, guys. He couldn't get on the field ahead of a bunch of nobodies. And then he ended up having a good year, and it was partially influenced by the fact that Juice Wells got injured during the year, and that influenced his usage during the season as well. So I have a lot of doubts. Like, even looking back just at last season, there are big play flashes, but there's a lot of inconsistencies. I mean, he had a very high usage rate within the offense, and that padded the stats a little bit. And I don't necessarily see the consistency, especially the fact that he wasn't really running a full route tree. He did a lot of damage after the catch, but the production that he was doing after the catch was very up and down. There were plays where it looked like he was leaving stuff on the field because he didn't necessarily, even though he looks like a running back with the ball, I don't think he really has, like, running back vision with the ball. And so, man, I've got a lot of doubts, especially with the landing spot too. Like, you just drafted Jonathan Mingo. Why did you need another Jonathan Mingo? They're the same player. I mean, that's Jonathan Mingo, except that Mingo is much better after the catch. He was fantastic after the catch at Ole Miss, and that was one of the reasons why there was some optimism for him last year with Bryce Young being a guy who really excels on showing, with accuracy on the shorter routes, that having one of those players fits. So, I don't know. Maybe having both of them on the field, you can design something that you could turn both of them into good yak guys in that offense. But it feels redundant having Mingo and Legette on the field together, and I think it's a big risk to take that type of player, because those older one-year wonder players at any position, but especially at wide receiver, are big risk. There's a high bust rate with those types of players.
It was while you were describing his production, I was thinking of Jonathan Mingo, who kind of had a similar situation coming out of school as well. So yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. And then, kind of finishing up the wide receivers here, just talk to me about Ricky Pearsall and how much you love him, Rich, and how excited we can be about him if nobody moves.
It's interesting though. I mean, Ricky Pearsall's not kind of the wide receiver for this offense though. It's interesting. Like, he would have been more of like for the McVay scheme than more the Shanahan scheme. Like, he's definitely not a replacement for what Brandon Ayuk does in that offense. I mean, Ricky Pearsall is more of like a pure slot guy. Like, there's a lot of conversation between like Pearsall and Ladd McConkey and kind of, what those guys do. And McConkey was a guy who beat man coverage and won outside a lot more than Pearsall did. And then, granted, Pearsall played with not good quarterback play, the 2 years at Florida, but like, he's just also a guy that doesn't have like the man beating like stats and kind of his background that McConkey has. So it is kind of an interesting fit. I don't think we can just draw a parallel saying like the 49ers taking Pearsall definitely means they're trading Brandon Ayuk, because they're very different players. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting fit, man. I'm very kind of curious about this one. I haven't gotten to it because after the Worthy pick, I kind of jumped on here and have like him and Legette, who we just talked about, like to kind of jam in there. And two very interesting landing spots, like we kind of talked about. But I like Pearsall a lot. And I don't know. I feel like he might get steamed too much because of, like, you know, if one of these Niners guys get traded, and obviously what Shanahan's turned water into wine the last couple of years with guys. But also another guy, when you look at, like, his history before not hitting on, you know, on Ayuk, like, there was a lot of misses there too. So, you know, I'm very puzzled by it. It doesn't seem like a fit though.
Yeah, I'm completely with you, Rich, on that, especially saying how he's not quite the right fit for this offense. Pearsall, the 49ers, the Shanahan offense, they want guys who produce after the catch, right? Like, that's all they do. That's what the offense is designed around. That's why Debo has been so good in that offense. And look at what Mike McDaniel has done in Miami. Like, that, he's almost taken it to an even higher level than they do. And that's not Pearsall at all. Like, he is kind of like a, he can get down the field. He can stretch the field. I think he can run a full route tree, and he's got really reliable hands too. You're going to love that about him. But that's why exactly what you were saying is he's sort of more of, like, you would think he would fit really well in the Rams offense as sort of the Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp type of receiver. Like, that's sort of where he fits. And that type of receiver doesn't seem to have a big role in the Shanahan offense. And so, you know, I've mentioned this type of stat all offseason, these route adjusted numbers. And if you look at his route adjusted yards after the catch or during his two seasons at Florida, it's just 1.4% above expected. For, you know, it's slightly above average for college guys, but as we're projecting guys from the NFL, you know, we expect first round pick type of guys to be much higher than that. Like, the guys who can actually produce after the catch, like a Xavier Worthy and whatnot, they're at like 25-35%. And so someone like Pearsall going into that offense as a guy who's not really doing much after the catch doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, even though, like you said, there's things to like about him. It just feels like an odd fit.
Yeah. And he's a guy that just didn't, like, and we could say, you talk about the quarterbacks a little bit, like I brought up, but, like, you still, like, aren't, or he wasn't earning targets in man coverage. It'd be one thing where you'd say, like, he earned a bunch of targets and they weren't catchable. Like, he probably was getting open to earn those targets, but he wasn't earning targets in man coverage. And that's, like, kind of concerning for the fit there. And if you say, like, all right, well, maybe they're going to run more 11 personnel, because they historically haven't, you know, especially since Shanahan joined the 49ers, and, like, he's a potential replacement for Juwan Jennings. Like, you don't replace Juwan Jennings with a first round pick. So it's very intriguing landing spot on the surface. Try to dig into more. Maybe there's a larger vision that we're missing here.
You can read about, like, all the wide receivers, all the quarterbacks that we just talked about for redraft, fantasy, dynasty, all of that over at sharpfootballanalysis.com. Rich has written everybody up. If you're listening to this live, not Pearsall or Leggett yet, but by Friday morning, they will also be in there as well with his round one recap. So make sure you go and check that out at sharpfootballanalysis.com. I want to move on into more kind of like an overall conversation about the night. And I guess we just get started with the question that everybody's going to be talking about. Who did best tonight, Ryan? What team did you look at what happened tonight, what they did tonight? You came away thinking they did a really good job.
Almost everybody. I think almost every team did a fantastic job. I mean, I was tweeting about this during the draft. I think we've had a lot of teams make really good hires at GM over the last few years. And for a really long time, you could look around the league and be like, that guy's the village idiot. Like, there was always a Dave Gettleman or a Matt Millen or a John Gruden or an Al Davis running the show. And you just knew they were just going to do some every year. One of those guys was going to do something stupid. And there's some picks that I don't necessarily like. Like, we were just talking about the 49ers and Pearsall and how it's like sort of a questionable fit, but they drafted for a need. They got a player that there's like redeemable qualities about. They're, you know, they obviously have a plan for it. It could certainly work out. There's really not a whole lot happening in this first round that I can point to and be like, man, you really dropped the ball there. And so, you know, I was writing down grades after each pick and I forgot to add them up, but I think I gave out like 16 or 17 A's. And I think of myself as a pretty harsh grader when it comes to the draft. Like, you got to draft someone pretty very close to the top of the best available player list at a position of need for me to give you an A. And a ton of teams did that. So it's really hard for me to point to like one team and saying they absolutely crushed it, because almost every team did. It was a really strong draft for just about everybody.
What about you, Rich? Anybody stand out for you?
Not necessarily. I kind of echo what Ryan said. I mean, even the picks that we might not like the individual player, like sometimes the organizations were put into a spot where maybe they felt like they had to reach. Like we talked about the Bo Nix pick, a little bit of maybe desperation. Obviously, the Raiders take Bowers. That just felt like a BPA, right? Like they just took the highest player that was available at that pick. And that was because that obviously Penix wasn't available for them, like one of the teams that was linked to him. And then that's kind of just how the rest of the draft kind of played out. Like once Bowers went and we had already had the six quarterbacks go and the three wide receivers, it kind of just all fell the rest of the way out, right? Like kind of as expected. So it was fun not as fun for me to see that huge run of offensive guys go in a row, but it was, you know, kind of cool to have 13 offensive players taken in a row, 14 actually taken in a row.
I can pick out a couple teams. I think what the Vikings coming into Thursday night.
Oh, they got slaughtered on draft value though.
So they likely thought that what they gave up in both of their trades to get up to draft JJ McCarthy and then trade back in to draft Dallas Turner, who many people think was the best defensive player in the draft. They might've thought they would have had to trade that much just to move up to get JJ McCarthy. And they were able to, instead of doing that, get both JJ McCarthy by moving up one spot and get Dallas Turner, who again, like I said, a lot of people believe was the best defensive player in the draft. And when I look at that, you're right, Rich, from a draft value perspective, maybe they did get killed a little bit, but like from an expectation perspective, I bet they're pretty happy with kind of how this.
Oh, of course. I bet every team feels like they're pretty happy right now.
I don't know if the Broncos are pretty happy, but probably Sean Payton is. And then the Jaguars, I mean, the Jaguars have a lot of needs and they were able to trade back and still get Brian Thomas. And I think that, you know, they'd have been really happy with being able to do that. What about, let's go the other way, go a little negative, rough night. You mentioned the Raiders, but they kind of got forced into it, Rich. Anybody stand out to you kind of with a rough night? Or are we all just going to say the Falcons because we're confused, or how are we going to do with this?
No, I mean, it's like I said, I think the Broncos should have punted for sure. I mean, I obviously I'm just not, even if the fit is right, I just think that team is just not in a position to compete. Like, and I've been harping on this the entire offseason, like this Denver roster right now is, I mean, it's the everything is fine meme. Like it is, like it is 100%. Like this roster is just lacking talent everywhere, and the few good players they have, they already have to extend. Like they don't really have any value. Like they need Bo Nix to be a huge positional value, but this team needs wide receivers, they probably need running backs, they need defensive players. Like they just need so much. And like even if you wanted force quarterback, man, just do it later, go down, do something else. Like I just don't see how this team gets out of this. Like right now they need Bo Nix to be like stellar. And like very rarely is like the QB six like ever good. So I don't know. I just don't see how like this helps the Broncos.
I think I said this earlier in the show, but for the Broncos, they had a bad quarterback room. They needed to try something. They did what they thought they needed to do. I can make an argument for that. Yeah. I have a much harder time with the Falcons with Michael Penix, even though I think Michael Penix is probably a much better player. I have a harder time with that because they should be in full win now mode. They needed defensive help. Every single defensive player was available to them there. Did the Vikings not want to trade up? You know, we say that with the Broncos. Could the Broncos have traded back? Maybe the Falcons couldn't have traded back, but I mean, the Vikings ended up trading up. Would they have traded up into that spot to get JJ McCarthy? It's a confusing thing to do to me. It might work out. Like if Michael Penix is really good, Ryan's right. Michael Penix was the number two quarterback in this draft. Then it's probably going to work out for them. But just, it seems like a strange thing to do for a team that I think should just be trying to build to win a Super Bowl right now with Kirk Cousins. Anybody stand out to you, Ryan?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would have to say the Raiders. Like, you know, maybe they got stuck, but even if they got stuck without, you know, they were obviously probably thinking a quarterback was going to be on the board, probably thinking Penix was going to be there. Even if they got stuck, Bowers is the wrong choice. He's not the best available. He might be the best available talent. It's not the best use of your draft resources because they don't have a terrible roster, but as long as Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell are your quarterbacks, you have a terrible team. And Brock Bowers is absolutely nothing. They did not get better today by drafting Brock Bowers, especially based on the fact that they already had Michael Meyer, who they took 35th overall last year. Different regime, obviously, who made that choice last year. But there's still reason to like Michael Meyer. He's a good tight end. They just signed Harrison Bryant, who's a good backup tight end. Like it wasn't even close to a need for them. entering this draft. And a tight end's a luxury pick. You know, I would have been okay, I guess, with the Jets taking him in the top 10 because they are 100% in win now mode. Like, they got a small window of opportunity. So that type of team making a luxury pick, I think you can justify it. But when you've got the worst quarterback situation in the entire league right now after tonight, what are you doing taking a tight end like Brock Bowers? It doesn't make you better at all.
And it's confusing also because we saw what they wanted to do on offense, or at least what we're assuming they wanted to do on offense. You know, the quarterback situation wasn't great at the end of last season and just run the football a lot, yep. Likely moving forward with Zamir White or whomever they add to that room. And Brock Bowers, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong on this. I'm not a draft expert, Ryan, but from what I've read, Brock Bowers is not going to help out in that regard, even a little bit. Right. So it's kind of a confusing fit from that perspective as well. But I think your point, Rich, it might've just been, they thought he was the best player. They're going to draft the best player and they're going
to
see.
But that's what, I mean, to be fair, that's like what Telesco's done. And it didn't work with the Chargers. Like, he always made like safe picks, like kind of took like what best player was available. And like the Chargers ended up with a pretty mid roster.
Yeah. that we all overestimated every single season. I'm really interested in the Chargers because Jim Harbaugh always wins in his first year. Always wins in his first year. And we're also down on this roster now. And they're just going to cut. Like, what if they just come out and win the division? The time that we're all out on the Chargers is they're now, it's time. It's time to shine.
Oh, no, they're going to win.
They're
going to
come out with
no
wide receivers to do it. He wins football games. Exactly. You could talk about him calling offensive linemen weapons all you want, which I don't disagree with him about that. But he wins football games. What are you going to do? He continues to win football games.
And listen, we all hate Greg Roman, but the dude's a good play designer. Like, maybe not the greatest play caller, but he's a great play designer. And they're going to have – the Chargers are going to have offensive efficiency. They are. They are. Will the defense be any better? That's kind of like what the looming question is right now. But they're going to win games. The Raiders, the Raiders are – this whole offseason, I've been harping on this, like, the worst thing that happened to the Raiders is they beat a bunch of shitty quarterbacks last year. Like, they because Antonio Pierce gets the comps to Dan Campbell, and they're furthest thing from each other. They get, because a lot of people think they're just like football men. Dan Campbell literally adds more EV than any coach in the NFL. Like, it's quantifiable that he's one of the best at reserving timeouts, when to go for it, when to not. Obviously, on the largest stage ever, it kind of backfired on him, and people bring that up. But like, Antonio Pierce did exactly what we've seen like a lot of interim head coaches do. He was unaggressive, coached like an archaic brand of football. I mean, the quarterbacks that they beat, and obviously they did beat Patrick Mahomes in one of the games. It was a game where their quarterback, they didn't complete a pass for three quarters in that game.
They did the JJ McCarthy.
They beat Jarrett Stidham. They beat Easton Stick in the game where the Chargers quit on Brandon Staley in front of everybody. They beat Zach Wilson, and they beat Tommy DeVito in a game where Daniel Jones tore his ACL. Those are the wins they had when Antonio Pierce was the head coach. Like, they lost a 0-3 game to Josh Dobbs and Nick Mullins. Like, I just don't know. I don't think this is going to work out big picture for the Raiders. I hate to say that a lot, but the hiring of Telesco, the commitment to Antonio Pierce, I just don't think it's a combination that's going to work out well, especially paired with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew.
Why'd you make me relive?
Well, let's also say that one of the things we should also mention, one of the things that Dan Campbell has done so well is hiring coaches around him, and Pierce got Luke Getsy to run his offense. And, you know, I don't think Getsy's the worst offensive mind out there, but I don't think anyone is. He's no longer labeled some up and coming star at the position either. So that's another stark difference between the two, I think.
Right.
And I had one more question here, favorite picks of the night. I think we've kind of covered that, but I just have to say every defensive pick after, well, I can't say every defensive pick from number 15 on, because that's just every defensive pick. Like, can you imagine? You are the, you know, Seahawks, and you're getting Byron Murphy at 16. They might have thought that. The Colts getting Latu at 15, maybe. The Vikings, Dallas Turner at 17. I mean, the cornerbacks for sure. Eagles, Kenyon Mitchell, 22. The Lions, 24. Terrion Arnold. I mean, Everybody that drafted a defensive player and needed defense has to be really, really excited about where the value they were able to get. And so those really stand out to me. What about looking ahead to day two? Good.
They said that QB thirst. The QB thirst pushed all those guys down.
That's right. The desert will get you. It'll get you every time. Looking ahead to day two, Ryan's going to have a bunch on the website, Sharp Football Analysis, about day two mock, day two props. But if we're looking ahead to day two, what are we focusing on, Ryan? What really sticks out to you that we're interested in?
As far as like major storylines, because we had so many offensive players go, it sort of like sucked some of the intrigue away from round two, because usually the big storyline heading into day two is like, well, where does that last quarterback go? Like the guy who's still hanging out there that was rumored to go in the first round, and that doesn't exist. That hasn't existed since the 12th pick in the draft. But, you know, Spencer Rattler is the one quarterback sitting out there who could go on day two. So obviously that's a little bit interesting, especially it'll especially be interesting every time the Raiders are on the clock tomorrow. Do they pull the trigger on Spencer? Do they get the sort of that? Do they hit panic button and go take Spencer Rattler, who I think is probably not someone they were expecting to have to draft? But, you know, there's still a ton of good players out there. You know, the highest guy who's available, who's on my board, is Jackson Powers Johnson, the center from Oregon. He can also play guard too. So, it doesn't have to be a team that needs center that could take him. You know, he was paired with a bunch of teams. There's actually a bunch of good centers available, which I think is probably one of the reasons why he slipped, because teams felt like there were other options. I think another big storyline right at the top of round two is going to be Johnny Newton, defensive tackle from Illinois. I think injuries is probably the reason why he's still on the board. He had that Jones fracture injury, which it tends to remove players from board sometimes when you have that specific injury. But he has drawn some Aaron Donald comps. I mean, he's like that undersized, but a game wrecker on the interior defensive line. So I'm really high on him. He was number 14 on my board. And I'm not factoring in injuries, obviously, but I'm really excited to see where he goes, because he's so good as a pass rusher that, you know, even if he's, you know, a little bit limited in how he defends the run, I think he has a potential to be an impact player as a rookie. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. If he goes to a contender, he could be someone who has a really big impact next year.
Are you, Rich? Anybody stand out for you?
Yeah, I mean, we're just waiting for the rest of the, you know, the fantasy guys, man. Because, I mean, when you look at the players, even the wide receivers that were selected, like, it's easy to make a case for Worthy. I even laid out potentially the case where, like, a Dunze maybe doesn't end up with, like, the dynasty capital of the, you know, Neighbors and Marvin Harrison. So like, who do the Bills end up taking? When and where do they add a wide receiver? This wide receiver class, everyone kind of was waiting for these day two wide receivers anyways, right? Like, we thought like this was the strength of that group. Like, necessarily when we cleared the top three, you might have to reach on some other guys. And the NFL really didn't do that until the very end of the first round with Pearsall and Leggett. Like, a lot of people, like McConkie didn't go, like, you know, guys like Keon Coleman, like a lot of guys that were rumored to flirt with that first round capital, Troy Franklin, and like they ended up not going, right? And they shouldn't have gone, but now they should go on day two, right? Like, they're day two picks. So like, where do they go and where does that kind of lead them into the, you know, on the fantasy lines? Even like you said, the running backs, but like we might not even get one until the third round. So we'll see, you know, see if Jerry signs Zeke back or not.
The Cowboys have not hidden even a little bit that they want Jonathan Brooks. It hasn't even been a little, like, they've been as open about that as possible. And so, yeah, I would expect we see that. That first Bills pick, assuming they make it, they could just keep trading down. But that first Bills pick, I mean, where they go? What if they end up with Keon Coleman? What if that's what they do? What if that's why they're trading back, because that was actually the guy they wanted? That might be an interesting thing. Like I said, we're gonna have a lot of content on the website on Friday.
Ryan's a Browns fan. The Browns, they haven't picked yet. They pick tomorrow.
Oh yeah, who are the three? It's the Browns, the Texans, and now the Bills. It was going to be the Panthers, but now it's the Bills. Am I forgetting one?
I think that's it, unless the trade shook it up. But yeah, I think you got the three there.
Man, fun times. The Bills. Going to spend a pick on a running back? Somebody had that at one of the podcasts we do, spending a pick on the running back. Was that you that had that? I forget.
The Browns?
Yeah.
Did you say? Yeah. I think I think I mentioned Jonathan Brooks as a Browns option because the fact that he's coming off an injury and the Browns don't necessarily need him right away because I've got one more year of Nick Chubb, it seems to fit perfectly.
That'd be fun for the Cowboys. Just Cowboys tears everywhere. Jonathan Brooks ends up somewhere else. But like I said, there'll be a round two mock from Ryan.
They're two picks ahead of the Cowboys.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. I think it's 54 and 56, right?
Ooh, we're going to have fun. So stay tuned for that on the draft for the exciting Jonathan Brooks news beat. Stay on to that. Ryan, like I said, Ryan will have a mock draft for day two up on the website, sharpfootballanalysis.com. You can find the round one recap from Rich Rebar, as I struggle to say that as we move towards 1 a.m. as we're recording this. You can find that at sharpfootballanalysis.com as well. Make sure you go and check it all out. We really appreciate you listening to us, staying up late with us, and have a great day.